Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show tonight, and this show is going to be very fascinating, right up my alley. I've always been fascinated with a lot of the things that Linda researches, and we have Linda S. Godfrey, and she's an author and researcher of The Strange and Uncanny, and is especially well-known as an authority on the upright canine known in Wisconsin as the Beast of Bray Road, in Michigan as the Dog Man, and other places as Skinwalker, Werewolf, or a dozen other names. She appeared in and co-wrote and co-produced the History Channel's Monster Quest episode, American Werewolf, based on her book, Hunting the American Werewolf, and also appeared in the show's season 4 finale. She's canvassed Wisconsin, Michigan, looking for strange and offbeat, and from outsider artists and giant roadside statues to local cemetery lore, eccentric people in history, to ghost stories, unidentified creatures, and UFOs. She's put over 5,000 miles on her weird mobile and found enough strangeness to fill both Weird Michigan and Weird Wisconsin for Barnes & Noble in 2006. And she has the sequels Strange Michigan and Strange Wisconsin for Trails Books. And she's a former award-winning newspaper reporter and art teacher and provides many illustrations of her books. So without any further ado, we want to welcome Linda on the show. Linda, are you with us?
I'm here, thanks. Great to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show. There's so many areas I want to cover, and we have a person that hangs out here who is very interested in this werewolf. She's had dreams about it, and
really?
Supposedly telepathic communication, and didn't know what to do with it. It kind of freaked her out. But we could probably start there with some of the experiences that you've come across with these upright canines.
Well, I have actually had people report that type of activity to me more than you might imagine, but it's not the typical. I almost have begun to sort those into a different category, because most of the encounters, probably 95% or more, involve seeing something that doesn't overtly act supernatural. It's not glowing green or flying or, you know, doing anything that a natural wolf couldn't do if sufficiently motivated. It just feels unnatural because they're seeing something that looks like a wolf or a dog, very large, usually 5 to 7 feet tall. And the weird thing about it is that it's navigating mostly on its hind legs. Oftentimes people will see it crouching or kneeling or on all fours, only to have it rise up and then run at them or run away from them on its hind legs, or vice versa. So it seems to be able to do both. But it's that, and it's not only that strange bipedal behavior that freaks people out, it's that it seems to have this very uncanny intelligence and awareness of them, and rather a superior attitude. You know, they'll say they felt that it was sneering at them, or that it was leering at them, or that it was telling them in so many thoughts that they better not tell anybody that they saw it, or it would come and get them. You know, things like that. So it's for the most part seeing what could be a natural animal behaving in very unnatural ways, and this behavior is extremely consistent throughout many decades and across the U.S., I might add. But then I have this other subset where there are definite supernatural overtones to it, and an increasing number of what I call the bedroom invaders, which are where people will experience these things coming into their homes. Often, they may be in bed, but they're usually awake. Some have been in broad daylight while the people were walking around their house or outdoors, and they see what seems more like a phantom creature. And these creatures are usually black, more humanoid in the body, and they don't do anything to the person. They just seem to be merely observing or looking around, perhaps controlling the person a little bit. But it's a very different experience than the ones who see the things that look like more natural animals.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of Native American lore about, you know, these. I can't remember the name they use for these, you know, man-wolves or werewolves or whatever. And It seems like there's a long history of accounts of either shapeshifters or experiences, you know, in the Native American cultures.
Well, that's true, you know, and they, as you travel across the country and talk to different indigenous peoples, they have their own terms for them. One of the most best known is the Navajo skinwalker. But you go to, say, the Algonquian tribes, and like the Canadian Cree, and they will call it a skin changer. In other places, especially, again, in northern tribes, you'll have something called a bear walker. And then you'll get many, and those, of course, are English translations. There are lots and lots of native language names for these creatures, too, you know, that, that vary from place to place. And there are several, there's not like a one-size-fits-all Native American theory, but there are several categories. One is the skinwalker or skin changer that's generally agreed to be a shaman that's following a dark path of medicine that is able to conjure, either conjure some sort of nature spirit up or project a portion of his own spirit that is shaped to resemble this animal. It's almost like, and sometimes they can even send it out from them to do their bidding. Other times it's like a spirit animal suit that surrounds them and they go out. And there's still, I know in Upper Michigan, the Upper Peninsula, and into Canada, there's still quite a fear of bear walkers. There was a threat against a college just not all that long ago for having, harboring what an area tribe considered their remains of ancestors that were accidentally dug up. So it's not like something that's in the far past. It is something that is not, if you know Native Americans and you ask them about it, they'll often be very reluctant to talk about it. They may only talk about it in one certain season of the year when it's believed to be lying dormant, and the rest of the year they feel that talking about it will only attract the thing to them. But there are other ideas about it too, and one of the most prevalent that I've had from different nations that I know, a Ho-Chunk elder told me this, probably explaining it in the best way, is that they believe that both the upright dogman type creature and Bigfoot are spirit animals, basically spirit animals that can come here from the spirit world. And when they are here, they're real. They eat, they need energy. That's why you see them carrying around chunks of roadkill and deer. But they have some ancient business that keeps them from eating people, basically. And when they need to go back or want to go back to the spirit world, they know where the entrances are, and they can sort of slip back and forth. And that's one reason why you never find a Bigfoot skeleton. But they do say that these creatures were known to their far distant ancestors and that they're older than man.
Yeah, I live right in the middle of Bigfoot country. I'm right at the base of Mount Adams, where up in the I'm trying to think of the area. It's up in the Sawtooth Mountains up there in the berry fields.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they've had all kinds of sightings up there, and a lot of research is being done up there because of there has been so many sightings. And the people in Trout Lake here, we're the last little town before the wilderness area, and they just accept Bigfoot. It's real. There's just too many people have seen it.
Right.
And some of the locals actually feed it. You know, they put apples and cucumbers out for it. And yeah, and they disappear. And there's a psychologist up here, I can't remember his name, I think he's at Washington State University, that saw one and it just turned him upside down. And so he's been out trying to prove they exist. And they've faked him out on every turn. It's just amazing where they're coming at it. Their description of it is that it's a remnant of this ape. You know, I think it's what, Gigantus pithecus or something like that.
Gigantopithecus, right. Yeah. That's one theory.
Yeah. And I said, but if this thing is just a dumb ape, you know, how come it's got the apples, you know, and the fruit you've put out every time, and you haven't been able to get a picture of it with all your scientific gear, your infrared gear, everything you have there, it's outsmarted you every time.
It may be an ape, but I don't believe that it's a dumb ape. And yeah. And I personally also know too many people who have seen it in good light at very close range, have no doubt what it was, and I know the people well enough to know that they're not lying about it. Mm-hmm. Just in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they don't get as big here as they get there. You know, I think Lauren Coleman calls them the Eastern Bigfoot, and mm-hmm. I think that's what we have here. But all over Wisconsin, they seem to be larger in the northern parts of the state. But down here in southeastern Wisconsin, where I live, I've been keeping track because people will report these things to me as well as the dogman. And just within a certain kind of crescent-shaped area that spans a couple of counties, but really isn't that much of a tract of land, I have at least 13 really credible good sightings from the 1960s until present. The most recent was just this last September. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently investigating that one, and we've already pulled a footprint. We're watching a structure that continues to have changes that humans could not do. Trees that are broken off and then added to this strange structure that would serve no purpose for a human. We're not even certain what purpose it would serve for the Bigfoot, but I know it's there somewhere, you know, and we're starting to do stakeouts. I'm not revealing locations because I don't want a deluge of people from all over the world descending upon this mm-hmm. poor little area. And it's also private land. Well, when that happens, you know, it's really hard because, you know, everybody's interested when you have a good habitation case and something that seems like it might be observable. Everybody wants to come and see it. And I totally get that. But you can't let it happen because it will either drive the creature out, destroy evidence that's there, alienate the people who own the land and the witnesses who really don't mm-hmm. want to be the focus of attention, or be called liars or go through any of the, you know, the scathing
ridicule. Yeah.
Ridicule that a lot of people receive. So we're keeping this one kind of quiet until we have some real evidence one way or the other. But yeah, I think it's pretty remarkable. And I think that says something to how widespread across the country these creatures are. And it's interesting because within this one certain area, when I get reports, it's almost always Bigfoot, and you go to the west or the east of it, and it turns out to be the dogmen again.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's kind of like they have their own separate territories carved out.
Interesting. You know, we do have a two-hour show, so I didn't want to take up time but with this story because other people have heard it before, but I had the honor of seeing a female Bigfoot about 50 feet away.
No way.
Yeah, and I sat there just staring at her with my hands out, open, you know, to let her know I wasn't a threat. I didn't have any weapons or anything. And just kept sending her as much love as possible to get her, you know, to respond. And she was sitting on a log next to, I'm not going to tell, same reason I'm not going to tell where this happened, that you don't tell people where, because I don't want people going there and hassling it, you know.
Right.
They're their own nation here. They have their own territory.
Right.
But it was quite interesting. And we sat there staring at each other, and she stood up and walked right in front of me. And I could see her breasts. That's how I knew she was a female. I saw perfect, you know, features in her face. And she actually nodded and smiled.
And, really?
And I got a message, like almost a telepathic message, like, thanks, but no thanks. Like, we don't deal with humans. Sorry. You know, it's like, I don't care how nice a guy you are.
And did you feel that this creature was entirely corporeal and real?
I'll tell you what, yeah, there's more to the story, and you could probably put this down in your notes because this is really crazy. And I just did an interview with Lloyd Pye, and, you know, he's under the impression that it's an ape, and it's just been here forever, and it hasn't really evolved. And you know, I was in a little bit of disagreement because I think everything evolves. I mean, look at our evolution, and I think this being either was very advanced in the beginning or through time, it evolved in nature and is very advanced, you know, probably at the height of the nature kingdom. Because what this did, it started out with this ball of light came flying through the forest, and I grabbed a pan and I lifted this pan up to block it, which is probably highly overrated as far as protection. But I was cooking dinner and it came right at me, and it wasn't dark yet. You know, it was still, and there was a full moon, and it wasn't even dark yet. And this ball came right at me, went around the van and down a trail. Hmm. And that's how it began. And so I go, that was freaky. You know, that was weird.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, went on and I made a fire and was starting to cook dinner. And then I heard this moan, and I can almost mimic it. You know, it kind of went, it sounded like a man, a very hurt, wounded man. And it was groaning, like, you're just going like this. And then it would go like a scream, kind of.
Like a whistle? Or would you say a whistle?
No, more of a really high cry, like a screaming cry, and it just sent chills down you when it did it. And I knew immediately. I just knew intuitively what it was. I go, that's a Bigfoot. You know, that's not a bear. I spend a lot of time in the forest, and I go, it's not a mountain lion. You know, they make a lot of noise. You know, especially when they're mating. I know what that sounds like, and this was nothing like that. You know, there's no way, a human could have faked that either. It was just so loud and so intense.
Right.
And I went down. I thought it was hurt. I thought it was wounded or was hurt, mm-hmm. and it wasn't. And I got right up to it, and I had it in reverse, getting ready to get out of there. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew it was a bear, and I didn't feel threatened at all. I felt more sad, a lot of sadness coming from it. Hmm. Very intense sadness. And I have a real heightened sensitivity level. I had a near-death experience that opened that up, where I can sense the energies of what the surroundings and what's going on with people and events. But it was quite interesting, but she, finally stood up and just walked right in front of me, and she did not make it to the forest, and she vanished.
This doesn't sound like a normal natural creature. I mean, this sounds like it is, you know, at least living in some sort of dimensional shift or
between worlds somehow
right, exactly. Like exactly as my Native American sources say.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I saw that, I kind of scratched my head. There were prints left there, and the prints just disappeared because she was walking on the sand. I didn't even think about it. I didn't have a camera or a cell phone or anything at the time. And all I have is there's other witnesses there that heard the moaning, you know, and saw the light go flying by. And that was about it. But they locked themselves in the car. They were freaked out. You know, they didn't.
Yeah, it's pretty freaky. Yeah. But, you know, the sound you were making, I was going to compare it with my latest witness, September mm-hmm. 4th, was kneeling in her garden working, pulling weeds because it had rained during the evening and it was still very warm. It was about 10:30 at night. But they have a business, so they have huge yard lights. So she had all the yard lights on and it was just like daylight when she heard this. She described it as a combination growl and whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And she managed to find something that was like it on a website that you can go and listen to it. And she said it was exactly like it. And she said the vibration, when she first heard it, and she had no inkling that anything might be out there. She's from a different country, didn't really even know about Bigfoot. But she said she felt the vibration so strongly that she thought whatever it was like 3 feet behind her. And she mm-hmm. whirled around, and she also saw it from about 50 feet away. It was in some weeds at the edge of her yard. The weeds go form a boundary between the yard and this nearby woods. And then they're all surrounded by cornfields. So it's fairly isolated. But that was the sound that she heard. And she actually was in denial. She heard it the first time, and she kind of turned around and was like, oh, no, I didn't. But then it made the same mm-hmm. noise again. you know, as if it was wanting her to turn around and look at it. And she turned around and looked at it again. And she made a sketch of it for me. It's definitely Bigfoot. And I can tell the difference very easily when people can see the head or the feet clearly. Besides the size, the Bigfoot's bigger and bulkier. This was either between 8 and 9 feet mm-hmm. tall, based on having her son of a known height stand in the same spot and then measure how much she could see the creature versus how much she could see of her son. But it was like it wanted her to see it for some reason, mm-hmm. which is really strange. But when she turned around the second time and stared at it for a good long time, and realized it was, and she could see its eyes. She could see upper and lower teeth. Its teeth were bared at her. Mm-hmm. And she suddenly became so afraid that she, rather than running around to the door, it was a little closer to scramble up a rock embankment and go in her back door. And that's what she did. And I was looking at it. She's a tiny person. And I don't know how she made it up that rock embankment.
Yeah.
She went straight up. Uh-huh. And she admitted then later that she had seen large footprints in the snow the previous winter, and just they were so odd that, again, you see those things and you try and rationalize them. She had rationalized that her son must be trying to sneak out of his window and had somewhere gotten snowshoes that were shaped like human feet to walk out to the cornfield, but she didn't know why he'd be going to the cornfield. And finally she asked him, and he said, "Mom, I'm 21 years old. If I want to go outside, I'll go out my door and take my car, you know, and I don't even own snowshoes." So,
yeah, it is interesting. I had a very well-known remote viewer look at the situation, and I asked him, I said, you know, she was very distraught and very upset. And he was looking at it, and I didn't even tell him the story. I just said, "Hey, you'll never guess what happened to me on my trip." And he just smiled at me, and he said, "Bigfoot." And he knew what had happened. And I go, there is no way he could have known that because, really? You know, we didn't have a cell phone. We didn't talk to anybody. And what are the odds of him pulling that? And then he goes, she was a female. And he didn't, he couldn't have had that information either.
Hmm.
And he told me that she was so distraught because she was separated from her daughter. And uh-oh. he said, that's the only reason you got close to her. And I asked him, can you remote view where they're at, what happened, or where the daughter is? And he said the daughter's back with the others. And so there's a whole tribe of these Bigfoot in this area. And, it's amazing that, you know, he had details down, but he said that they just don't, when he tuned in them, he said they're very wary of humans and it's always gone bad and they just don't want to deal with us, you know, and I don't blame him.
Did he feel they were aware of him?
Yeah, he did. He said that they, when he was remote viewing them, he sensed that they knew he was looking at them. And I've had some meditations where I've actually had a face of Bigfoot, a very old gray one, almost silver-haired one, that kept popping into my mind. I go, this is interesting. And I saw a younger one with him in a meditation. I kept seeing it over and over again. And there's a lot of talk to an elder here, an Indian, up on the Yakima Reservation. We're right next to the reservation. And he told me there's an old gray elder, Bigfoot, that is actually, communicating with people and he has an apprentice, like a younger one that travels with him, I thought that blew my mind because it tied in with exactly what this vision I kept having.
Well, you know, the reason I asked you whether they were aware of you is because I had a man who was trained by the government in remote viewing and worked for them in that capacity at one time, mm-hmm. volunteer to look at the dog man. And he went and searched out these creatures, and eventually he also felt that they became aware and began to visit him. And he was pretty frightened by that. I mean, they frightened him rather badly. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't do that anymore. I can't have, I just can't have them coming around because they're a little more malign, they're more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And in a very similar way, people who are reporting to me their experiences with them will also say that they felt it was sending them a message. not mm-hmm. not in King's English or in so many words, but more of an empathic impression, if you will. Something mm-hmm. like, you're there, I'm here, you can't get me. If you tell anybody you saw me, I'll get you. That kind of thing.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like a good pursuit to do, you know.
No,
have you had
no.
any knock on your door? I mean, considering you wrote the books about them? Or...
No, you know, and it's kind of weird. I really don't even actually dream about them. Once in a great while, I'll have sort of a dream, but in this strange way, you know, because I came upon this occupation so accidentally, I almost feel like I stumbled into a role as, I call myself the Accidental Werewolf Chronicler, uh-huh. and it's sort of my place to write about it, but not ever to interact or see them. And because I've had as good a chance as anybody to see these creatures or the Bigfoot, because I get the reports, and I have more opportunities to go and explore very recent sighting areas than most people get. And I've done stakeouts and, you know, baited things and, you know, trek sites. I can't afford to go all over the country, but when a place is reasonable for me to get to and I have permission and it's recent enough that there might be something, I like to make field trips if I can. And the weather's permitting, you know, there are all these conditions. And as much as I've tried, the closest I've ever come was seeing the spine of something that was covered with gray fur. It was just outside the edge of a spotlight on a very lonely road in rural Michigan. I was there with the History Channel, whose camera was, of course, turned the other direction at the mm-hmm. time. But we had several witnesses there with us, and one of them also saw this. It crossed the road just outside the edge of the spotlight, and it blotted out a reflective road sign as it crossed. We measured the road sign, and it was 7 feet tall. So mm-hmm. whatever it was had to be at least 7 feet tall. It was vertical. It had gray fur. Beyond that, I can't tell you what it was.
Yeah.
I can't, because I couldn't see the head. I couldn't see the legs, the body shape, you know, just that gray fur. However, the three witnesses who were there had seen two different upright dog men on two separate occasions, and they had told us previously that one was shorter with dark brown fur and one was a little taller with gray fur.
Mm-hmm.
And these are fairly normal variations that you'd expect to see within any wolf pack. So
yeah, definitely.
It doesn't rule out that they were natural animals, but they were on their hind legs.
Yeah, they don't walk upright very... I mean, they'll stand up and look sometimes.
Normal,
you know,
wolves.
Just to, yeah, those sit up on their
right.
hind legs just and look around and then go back down again and take off. But
right. But they don't walk and run and pursue people.
No.
on their hind legs, unless they're, you know, sometimes you can find a wild animal that has a crippled forelimb. For instance, mm-hmm. if you go on YouTube, there's one of a bear. And bears actually have a little easier center of gravity for doing that. They can stay on their hind legs a little better than mm-hmm. wolves can. But this bear is running just perfectly well on its hind legs through the woods. And at first all you see is this brown running through the trees, and you can see where somebody might mistake that to be a Bigfoot or some other animal. But when you see a bear, no matter what position it's in, you know it's a bear. They're just unmistakable. Their bodies are just too unique, you know, to be mistaken for anything else. But I have consulted wolf behaviorists around the country, hoping to find somebody who says, oh, yes, we had a wolf pack where we observed that at times they would get up on their hind legs and run away. And none of them say that. In fact, you know, Lois Bueller, who wrote Wild Dogs of the World, I've had some conversations with her. And she told me that she thought it was very difficult, especially for a wild wolf, more than you know, a dog mm-hmm. to stand on its hind legs and run on its hind legs. She said that domesticated dogs are a little different and can do that, especially toy like terriers and smaller varieties that you normally see in the circus type acts.
Oh, yeah.
can do that. But the wolves just seldom do that. And I pursued all kinds of theories trying to figure out if there is a really natural reason that a normal wolf would do that, and so far have come up with zip.
Yeah, there's another topic I'd love to get into, and I don't know if you've researched it, and they've actually had reports on Coast to Coast about this, I think it's called a pterosaurus or something. It looks like a pterodactyl.
Right, yes.
And it's right in our area that they've been seeing this thing.
We get those too. They're all over the country.
And we've had witnesses here at the ranch. There's a opening that opens up on Mount Adams. This huge light door opens up, and we've filmed a lot of things coming out, you know.
Really?
Like light ships and orbs. And yeah, it's on the eSETI website. If you go to eSETI.org, you can check it out. But these objects, they look like a giant light ball, like an atom with rotating fields, come out, and they come right at the camera. We have them on film, and just crazy stuff coming out of there. But, you know, I've always thought that there's a major opening there, which might be to the, you know, the fabled inner Earth or whatever, and things might be getting out. But we've seen this thing flying around here, and I've never said anything about it. I've seen it, you know, and you know, some things you just don't talk about. And I've had about four or five people see it here, and a group saw it once. And the way it flies, I mean, it flies hard. I mean, it is really flapping to stay up, not like any other bird. When you see it flies totally unique. And, you know, it does soar, it soars. It's got a pretty big wingspan. But there's no feathers on this thing. It's leathery. It has leathery wings. And it has a ball at the end of its tail. And that's the reoccurring theme, is everybody saw, what is that? It has a tail with a ball on it. And so we looked it up, and I believe it's a pterosaurus or something like that, I think they call it. And it is real, and there's been sightings, as you said, all over the, you know, country of this thing, especially in Montana, has had some incredible footage of this giant bird flying around, and a pilot actually had an encounter with one as well.
Really? Well, I wonder if it's the same sort of portal that's letting out the Bigfoot and the Dogman.
Yeah, I wonder that too, because now up here, I've interviewed some tribal police and some other people about their stories, and there's a long history where we sat down and talked of strange creatures in the area. Some look like Yoda. They're kind of a yellowish color and look just like little Yodas. And they said, when you see one, don't look at it. Just act like you don't see it and walk away, you know, because they have some kind of ability to put thought impressions or whatever, you know, into your mind. And you know, these are their stories, and they have the little stick people. Mm-hmm. They call them, that run around. They're like in Hawaii, they call them the mini Hoonies or whatever. And they see them all the time with little bundles of sticks or baskets, and they just vanish. They'll run across the road into an open field, and you know, they'll stop and get out, and there's nothing anywhere. They just disappear. And you know, not to mention the Bigfoot and the you know, amazing UFO activity up here. It's just nonstop.
It all seems to go hand in hand, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does tie together. And we've been here for 25 years and have just boxes and boxes of footage of just crazy events happening here. A lot of just undeniable UFO footage, you know. But I think we're sometimes just a little too real for some people, you know. It's we have too much evidence to back up, you know, what's happening here.
It's inconvenient to have that evidence, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's inconvenient to other people.
Yeah, you know, especially if you have a program that you're running, you know, and you've written books, and you want to pigeonhole everything into one little box, and you know, you can be very threatened by, you know, something that's much bigger than your box, or it might be contrary to you know, your program as being the only program.
Right, right. Yeah, I'll find things every once in a while that, you know, in examining all the parts of one case, there may be something that doesn't quite fit in. Mm-hmm. And you can't hide those things. You know, you have to just put it all out there, whether the truths are convenient for your particular theory or not, you know, because...
Yeah, exactly.
Because you never will arrive at the actual truth, you know, unless you have all the pieces.
Yeah, that's what I've always talked about the UFO community. I just told them, I said, you know, none of you have the whole picture. And you all have a piece of the pie, and you're fighting over it being the whole pie. And if you took all your pieces and put them together on the table, you'd have the whole pie. But to do that, you have to learn to cooperate and work together and stop with the me mind program and just really right. focus on getting at the truth.
Right. And I do see a trend of more and more people who are going for the theory that maybe there are multidimensional creatures, or perhaps there is some sort of inherent spirit matrix mm-hmm. that's always been here that can interact with the human mind to form different manifestations that all come from the same source, but perhaps look like the flashing orange ball one moment, the mm-hmm. Bigfoot, the dog man, the UFO, the little people, whatever. And I think that either one of those is probably more plausible in explaining all the very unusual experiences that people have, mm-hmm. rather than trying to imagine that here in southeastern Wisconsin, we've got large breeding populations of Bigfoot and upright canines that are never caught on trail cams. You can never take a picture of them, that are so elusive that when you see them, it's only for fleeting moments and they're always able to get away, that mm-hmm. seem to have a sort of telepathic connection with people. I mean, there can be one cougar in traveling through several counties, and it will show up on people's trail cams. And cougars are, according to wildlife experts, the most elusive large carnivores that we have in the country. And yet, if they're in the territory, eventually you can track it, you can take pictures. This is what I keep... This is an inconvenient thing. You know, supposedly people say, if the dog man is real, if the Bigfoot is real, why can't we get pictures of it? And I have to admit, well, when a bear showed up in Madison a couple years ago, it was in someone's backyard. It was a very rare event, but the bear did not care if anyone took its picture. It came up to the back porch. It let people take its picture. It climbed the tree. It let them tranquilize, dart it, fell out of the tree. You never see this with a dog man or a Bigfoot. Why is that? You know, it certainly doesn't go toward proving the reality of it, but it's a fact. And rather than try and ignore that fact or explain it away, I think it's much better to take that and weave it into the fabric of all the sightings and mm-hmm. try and see where that leads you.
You know, the American Academy of Science actually did a research project on Bigfoot up here in the area, and there's a very thick book on it. And in the book, they had a questionnaire, which was very articulate in it, and it would ask, you know, do you wear glasses? Were you drinking at the time? Are you on any medication?
Right. I always ask people that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was very, very thorough. And it would say, okay, where did you see this creature? You know, how tall was it? What color was it? You know, what were its facial features? And they get into all these details and, you know, they'd ask, well, how long was its neck? And everybody goes, it didn't have a neck. You know, it was just,
right.
It's almost like its head was sitting right on its shoulders.
Yeah, that's what I get.
Yeah, and so all this detailed descriptions from people who are very well known, you know, in their communities were cataloged in this report. And so when you have that many people having these experiences and cataloging them. And, you know, there's people here that have seen it that don't even want to talk about it because
oh, sure.
of church affiliations and And, but they have, they'll talk to me about it. Same thing with the UFOs. They said, you know, yeah, I saw one. I saw a beam coming down. They had an elk get abducted by a UFO here with 14 tree planters witnessing it. Just crazy stuff like that. And some will go, yeah, I want to talk about it. And others will go, no, leave me out of this. You know, I didn't see it, you know, and let's set this one aside. So it is interesting, that phenomena that happens there.
Well, many of the witnesses that I've had are either they're three or four people, middle-aged couples, broad daylight, people who've never imagined anything outside, you know, their ordinary world before, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, you know, they're crossing a bridge at night, and this Bigfoot is in their headlights 10 feet away, and they can see it, and they can see what it is perfectly, and they know it's not a man in a gorilla suit. Mm-hmm. You know, or any, oh, and yeah. I, when you know these people and you talk to them, I found out just recently, a middle-aged, very conservative, regular old couple that goes to my own church saw mm-hmm. the dog man on Bray Road, just 2 years ago, and they just felt like, well, we don't know if we should say it. I mean, and of course, I'm always, please tell me if you see these things. And they're like, well, we don't know if we should talk about it. And finally, they told somebody else. They didn't tell me even directly, even though I know them very well. They told mm-hmm. a different couple who said, you really ought to talk to so-and-so because they saw it. And they did. They both saw it run across the road in front of their car. And they could see it closely enough that they saw the hair flowing away from its body. And that they could see it was running on dog legs. It was not a human. They saw it hurdle a fence in a way that a human could not.
Mm-hmm.
And they never told anybody for 2 years. And then they just casually mentioned it. And, you know, thank goodness the other people told me, or I still wouldn't know. And I really do maintain that the vast majority of sightings of all of these things are underreported, because many people will either be like my witness that wanted to just be in like denial, like, oh no, I didn't see that, because mm-hmm. if I did see it, the world as I know it is completely different. Or they'll be afraid of being ridiculed, or they'll just blank it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll have people say to me, I saw it, and then I just blanked it out until I heard you talking on Coast to Coast or whatever, ESETI radio, and then it came back to me, you know, and I remembered mm-hmm. I had just tried to forget it all those years.
Yeah, that happens quite a bit. The I know here we had something interesting happen this summer where on my birthday I was meditating. And I said, you know, I'd just really love to have a low flyover just right over the house. And we had 2 days in a row, we had a massive ship fly right over us and power up and just light up the whole sky. Just amazing. And got it on film, you know, both of them. And then after that, as a little bonus, they flew over the Jonah Ministries, which is a Baptist. They took over the school here. It's a Baptist retreat center. And the Baptist Church, and they're hovering right over and they look like arc welding lights with a red tint to them. And we got a photograph of them, and it's, you know, it's probably the worst timing because my cameras were downloading the footage we got the two nights before, and so I didn't have my camera. I had my infrared night vision that I could look at it, but it wasn't really dark yet, so we could see them very clearly. And we did get a photograph from an iPhone of these ships, and it's amazing. You blow them up, and they look like something like the Starship Enterprise, and there's four of them. And they came in in a triangle with one trailing, and when they got over the church, they lined up straight up and down. And a lot of the townspeople saw them. They were there for a good 20 minutes, and then they just blinked out. Just disappeared.
Well, you know, just a week and a half ago on November 5th, my brother, who is a tech person for a school district here in southeastern Wisconsin, his wife and three guests were out using their hot tub when a football field-sized boomerang-shaped craft flew right overhead. He said it was just below cloud level. And it was so large and so silent and so fast that it couldn't have been any known aircraft. He knows what stealth looked like. Hmm. It was not a stealth. It was, he said it was just entirely too large and too silent. And there weren't lights on the bottom of it, but he said that they could see its shape because it was like it was backlit from the top.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of outlining it. But five people, you know, his wife and the three guests all saw it. And they were out on the deck and didn't have a camera with them. And it was gone before they could get in the house and get one.
Yeah, we had a big conference here. And there's 200 to 300 people that come to these conferences. And we did an intention experiment to invite, you know, the ETs to come. And, you know, we precedented it by, okay, we want very spiritually and technologically advanced beings that are here for the greater good, you know, here in service. And so we did this meditation and put the intent out there. And with over 200 people here, and Mary Rodwell was here, Dolores Cannon, Brooks Agnew, he's a biophysicist, John Riley, who's a Lockheed engineer, Renato Longato. I'm trying to think of all the guests. Neil Kramer was here. You know, all these different people that come to the ranch, it's like the who's who in the field have been here. And every event that we have here, we have a major flyover. But the last one was this beautiful pinkish-red, brilliant light ship, you know, throwing off all these different colors, came flying in right after the intention experiment, right on cue, flew right over the top of the conference building, and the Lockheed engineer got it, filmed it, and I think the Boeing engineer did too, and the that was there, as well as the Renato Longato, who's he's more of our Latin American correspondent that comes and gives talks about UFOs. He got it as well, and then John Riley got it, and he's a Lockheed engineer. So here you have 200 witnesses, kind of the who's who in the field, and you know, as well as all these engineers and physicists filming these things, and people keep asking that question: well, when are they going to make a contact? You know, when are they going to show up?
What do you think the relationship is between this kind of human psyche intent experiment and the UFOs? How do they perceive that? How are they connected enough to know and fly over because this group of humans is intending them to?
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, these beings are extremely advanced. They're very, very spiritually and technologically advanced. And even humans have this ability. When we, you know, rise to the occasion and do our spiritual practices, we start becoming more sensitive, more telepathic. We have a direct knowing starts to occur. We start to see the past and the future. We start having all these events that happen with us on our spiritual journeys. And so you can imagine a race of beings that are maybe, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions of years ahead of us, you know, what their abilities would be like. So, you know,
why do you think they're here now? Why? Now I'll preface this with saying that I've heard this, two prevailing theories as to why these large craft flyovers seem to be increasing in frequency. One is that they're coming to see the show, and the second one is that they're coming to measure for draperies.
There's, you know, the thing about it is that there are so many different groups coming here, and different groups have different agendas, and there has been a group that was very self-serving here that's created a lot of problems on the planet.
The Greys?
And the reptilians and Greys. And now that it's like the Calvary is coming. The light ships, the higher dimensional beings are stepping in, and they're coming in, and they're doing kind of a eviction notice and saying enough's enough. And that's what we're in the middle of right now.
Really? Well, that's a relief.
Yeah. So it's... you know, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of an evolutionary process. You know, the same thing with people say, you know, UFOs, what are they? Are they time travelers? Are they coming from the future? you know, are they interdimensional? Are they nuts and bolts? And are they all back engineered from the government? And, you know, everybody has a different story. And I said, it's all the above. You know, it's we've been back engineering them since the 30s. Actually, people don't realize that all the way back into the 30s. The Germans had working models back then.
The Nazis were very, very interested in those. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a long history behind this. So we have a lot of back engineered stuff that's flying around. We have our own space fleet. We've had that for quite a while. And then you have the higher dimensional beings that are popping in from other dimensions and checking in on us. And then you have some that are just a little more advanced than we are, that their technology far surpasses ours. So
what kind of technology do they have that can focus in on human intent well enough to perceive that you're asking for a flyover? That kind of stops me. I'm not sure how they...
Yeah, telepathic. It's just telepathic.
Okay.
It's kind of... In telepathy, there's no time, distance, or space.
It's,
if you really want to create a radio to communicate, and, you know, even to get here, their ships are going to have to go beyond, you know, light speed. And you couldn't communicate, you know, with a radio or something like that. I think it's kind of crazy we're trying to find them with radio waves and things like that. They're so far beyond that.
Right, that just seems a really primitive outreach.
Yeah, it's like using smoke signals, you know.
Exactly, that was, yeah. you took the words right out of my head and my mouth. I was going to say the exact same. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think the connection is, if any, between UFOs, Bigfoot, and dogmen? Because I noticed that wherever I've got the hotspots for these creatures, sure as shooting, there are UFO sightings and reports up the wazoo.
Yeah, there's... Now, I don't know too much about the dogman thing. We don't really have that up in this area, or I'm not aware of it if we do.
They're probably there. I get reports from California, and so they're probably there, but maybe they... Sometimes people see them and just assume it's Bigfoot because it's tall and furry, too.
Well, we're in Washington State. We're right at the base of Mount Adams. But... you know, and I'm very in touch with the locals and the Native Americans and things, and I just haven't heard that around here. But it doesn't mean, I always say, just because I haven't heard about or seen it doesn't mean it's not there. But what I've seen is that, and this is a walk on the wild side, we actually got some hair samples from where this Bigfoot was sighted. And the hair was really interesting. It was 3 foot long.
Wow.
Right around 3 foot long. It had, it was smashed like it fell from a very high place or got, I don't know, the guy that analyzed it said, I don't think this could have happened from a car or something else because part of it looked like it'd been smashed. And the hair samples were silicon based with other natural elements in it, and he said that these were grown. They weren't, there's no man-made hair that resembles this, and we had a forensic scientist and a fiber specialist check it out, and they were stumped. I mean, they actually said, what is this, alien hair, or where'd this come from? They could not figure out what it was. So that goes into one of my theories is that, you know, this could be some type of an android or a biological creation by
the
a
Bigfoot,
very,
you mean? The
yeah,
Bigfoot,
a very advanced
mean?
Race of beings that use it as a big bad dog, you know, for their area to observe things and things like that. And I also think there's one that evolved naturally. I mean, it's been here forever. I think there's more than one thing. And whenever there's a lot of UFO sightings, like you're saying, it seems like they're in areas where people see Bigfoot as well, so they do tie in together in areas, and we're sitting right on top of a portal here, and it's a major vortex, I have to ask him if I can share this story, but a very well-known talk show host came here, and we did this process we do where we connected him in, and we cleared up a lot of his past and traumas and things like that. And he made his own connection with the highly evolved ETs and actually got the name and everything from this being. And then he went to Sedona, Arizona to do a show, and he's one of the speakers there and everything. And the people there gave him the exact same information, the exact same name, and told him that you met her at the East City Stargate. And that kind of blew, I mean, I always knew that was going on here, but to have that validation coming from a totally different source that knew nothing of
that the event. That you had a Stargate, you mean?
Yeah, and giving the name, and giving the exact name of the being, and it was a being from the Orion Council of Light. It's quite interesting that it would be validated that way. And I am going to get him. I'm going to see if I can get him to talk about it and come forward. But I think he will.
Interesting, you know, and the Pleiades seem to come up quite a bit.
Yeah, that's the main ones that come here. The Pleiadians are the ones that come here, and they're really our ancestors. And they, what their story is they said that they were extremely involved in the earth and it's and a lot of the life here, the plant and the animal life, including human genetics. If you talk to the Native American elders, the people in the Philippines, especially the Cherokee tradition, they all pointed to Pleiades, and they said that's where our ancestors came from, and there's stories about that. I'm trying to think of the other Indonesian islands. In the Hawaiian Islands, you talk to the Kahunas, and they pointed to Pleiades as well. So there is a long historical background, you know, concerning that. And what we're being told is that the Earth was basically hijacked by some lower forms and lower intelligences that were very self-serving, and that's why we're in the big mess that we're in right now. And they're coming, they're returning now, and they're going to reset the consciousness and energy here and help us release the past and get the Earth back on track.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was contacted by a group of people who were working. They have kind of a side agenda that brings them into contact with a lot of interesting people. And they were telling me privately that they had actually met one of these Palladians that was attached to a very prominent Hollywood celebrity, and that they were at a hotel where they were given an audience, more or less, with this celebrity and the Pleiadian, and it was a female, and she actually showed them, moved her hair aside and showed them that she had working gills on the sides of her neck.
Wow.
And now this was seven people who all swore to me they had seen this, and I can't reveal the celebrity, but yeah, they were quite shocked and impressed. Because, you know, they said there was no way this was Hollywood makeup. But this celebrity was giving a lot of her money to sort of fund their research and various projects. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. I have no way of verifying whether that's true or not. But I thought, well, you know, I guess if I were an alien and I wanted a good source of funding on Earth, I would go toward the people who were making, you know, $25 million a year and have really nothing much to do with their money but build mansions and do other things.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it made a strange sort of sense, but
yeah, hopefully they'll keep the integrity levels on those. There's one thing I've noticed I had a really great group, Dreams Come True TV, that did Contact Has Begun, and it got out on Netflix and everything else. They did an excellent job on it and allowed me to really tell the story, which was nice. But for years and years, and it's still ongoing, there's a lot of, I've done so many interviews with so many different people that are supposedly of high integrity, and each time the interview gets squashed by other elements in the UFO field, and it gets hijacked and taken over, and then I just like get pushed off to the side, which is sad, because you know what what people don't understand is that the field of ufology is very, very controlled. You know, even the conspiratorial side and the people that are pointing at governments and things like that are, and the reporting centers are actually, you know, run by ex-military or ex-NSA or it's amazing when you really look at the background. You'll see the major conferences, the board members are, you know, people that are card-carrying CFR members, you know, and things like that. So it's a very controlled field. You'd be surprised. Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, they want to control the outlet of the information. And a lot of times they want to keep it as a fearful thing, as a negative thing, because that way, you know, you can control the people by, you know, saying, okay, there's a very, you know, like Carol Rosen talks about that, you know, they said that they were going to have several threats to keep the war industry going. And, you know, one was the Cold War, and then it would go into the tyrants, you know, in the Middle East, and then it would go into terrorism, and then it would just keep going to meteors. And the next thing you know, it would evolve into an alien invasion. So they have to keep a threat going to keep the money flowing and keep the assets going into those channels. So, you know, that's why you see so many movies out there, like blockbuster movies, like They Came to Eat You, you know, you were warned.
Right, right. Well, don't you think that these things also, that helps contribute to the infighting that happens among ufologists and Bigfootologists?
Oh, yeah.
There's so much controversy and fighting, and they do this, no, you do it this way, that kind of thing, in both of these fields. In a way, I've been a little isolated from that because with my main focus being the unknown upright canines, no mm-hmm. one else is really collecting those reports to any large extent.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much the only one writing books on that topic, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but one way or the other, it kind of keeps me out of these struggles.
These crazy agendas and egos. It is sad. You know, I always tell people, I don't have an attachment to my own experiences. If you can shed some more light on it or give me a more valid understanding of what's happening, I'm all ears.
Right.
You know, so it's like I don't need to defend anything, you know, but if you can't come up with a better explanation, you know, a good example is we had a ship land on Mount Adams. We got it on film, and this thing morphed from 1 to 3 and back to 1 again. It did it for about 20 minutes, and then a jet came flying by, and then it took off and led the jet away and then came back to the mountain. And, you know, we have all this footage. We showed it to the OMSI Planetarium there, and James Todd over there, and he said, oh, there's nothing to see here. That's just the space shuttle. But, you know, I know they don't have a landing pad up on Mount Adams. It's all wilderness area. You can't even get up there. You can't have a vehicle up there or anything up there. And what would a space shuttle be landing on the mountain and morphing from 1 to 3 and back to 1 again? So it's just getting beyond ridiculous, you know, what they're coming up with. And then they try to attack your integrity and say, you know, well, you know, I'm a scientist, I have a PhD, and you know, but we use all the websites. We go to Heavens Above and JTracker, JPL, and we make sure we're not seeing any known objects. And you know, mm-hmm. satellites don't stop, turn, power up. And we just have boxes and boxes of footage. But what's interesting in the field of ufology is that we're probably the most censored group on the planet, you know, and we have one of the most well-known hotspots internationally. So it's kind of a catch-22 situation.
Sometimes I think that the reason I sort of get by under the radar is because the dogman phenomenon is just seems too outrageous and too ridiculous on the face of it, you know, that people think, well, we don't have to bother, you know, trying to bollocks that up. Who's going to mm-hmm. listen to that? But I am getting more and more of an audience. The chief hassle that I get occasionally, really the only thing from, say, the field of of Bigfoot studies is that I do keep tending to hear that, well, these aren't really canines. They're just a different sort of Bigfoot, you know, and they'll call it the snouted Bigfoot. Which to me just doesn't make sense, because the witnesses that see these things are very clear. If they see a Bigfoot, they sketch for me a Bigfoot. There are no ears. There's no muzzle. The feet are long and heavy, and the legs are jointed like, you know, an ape's or a human's, and it walks flat-footed. Whereas if they see the canine, they see pointed ears on top of the head. They see a long pointed muzzle. They see it holding its arms in a certain way, and they can see that it's walking on its toe pads. And they also notice things that they really wouldn't think of otherwise, such as that it walks slightly hunched over, and that's because of a canine's anatomy. It just sort of has to. And they'll say that the legs are bent backwards, but that's because where we're expecting to see a knee joint, we actually see their heel and ankle joint above the ground. So, you know, they really are. I try to put the analogy as if you went to Africa just expecting to see a chimpanzee and instead you saw a hyena, you wouldn't call that a snouted chimpanzee.
Yeah, well, some would.
You know, some might, but you've obviously got two different species. Why are there two different species appearing like this? I don't know. You know, sometimes I wonder if they and the UFOs and the pterodons and pterodactyls are all sort of fulfilling the same mission, which is shocking certain people. Yeah. And people often do have the uncanny feeling that they were meant to see these things somehow. But shocking these people into awareness of realities beyond the known world that we think is the known world.
Yeah, I believe that. I definitely believe that. It's like, I think their own souls guide them into these experiences to kind of shake them out of their personality programs and their little boxes that they've been, you know, jammed into. And it is what I see. People have a huge awakening here when they come here and they see the ships for themselves. They have to reevaluate everything. And there's an exchange that happens here that you can't deny it. You get all high and giddy and you feel this energy exchange that happens when they're around, when they're present. And the birds start singing at night and the coyotes start howling. So the animals are also reacting to this energy as well.
You know, that's interesting, because something I've noticed that I'll have witness after witness tell me, and I don't think this is a generally known thing, but they'll say sort of the opposite, that all of a sudden they'll be outdoors somewhere and the crickets are chirping and the birds are singing, and all of a sudden all of that stops. The birds stop, the crickets stop. There's this eerie silence, and then they have the sighting. And I've even had one middle-aged couple that was awakened at night by the sudden silence. The crickets all stopped, you know, and they woke up and saw four of these creatures walking silently down their street. They went up to a house and swarmed it for a couple of minutes, climbed back down, and walked off. But it was the silence, you know, that preceded it. And I've wondered if perhaps that silence is precipitated by some sort of a time shift or dimensional shift where the birds and things didn't really stop singing. You're just taken out of it, out of context for a moment, and allowed to see this thing, and then it all comes back.
What we have happen here a lot is exactly what you're saying. It's almost like a pressure change. Like you feel the pressure change and energy change. It's dead silent. And then that's usually accompanied by a ringing, kind of a ringing sound in your ears. And then after that, within about, you know, maybe a minute later after that or 2 minutes later, that's when the birds start singing at night, which is crazy. I mean, why would they sing at night? And then the coyotes, because we're out in the wilderness here, the coyotes just all start singing. It's amazing. And we've even had the cows go off too as well at the same
time. Now that would be freaky.
Yeah, so there's we have yaks here, but they're pretty quiet. They hardly ever, I never hear them make any noise at all. But the cows are pretty vocal.
Yeah, cows can be. Well, you know, I live in the dairy state.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, have you ever had a Bigfoot? Do you have reports? Now, we've had a Bigfoot come very close to the ranch and let out this scream. It was just goes right through you. And it has kind of an echoing effect to it.
Yeah.
And then all the cows just went nuts. I mean, the whole herd started going crazy. And we have dairies on both sides of us. So you know, you can hear the cows just, they really sense it and go off like it's, threatening.
I've heard reports of the screams, but I haven't had anybody say their cows went crazy. So
yeah,
might not have put two and two together.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. We've had that happen here a couple times, and we've had them phasing in and out, and people seeing them, phase in and out just right next to them, and they
I've
think
heard that, yeah,
seeing things or going crazy or whatever. We had one instance. We had a woman here that was very just had this real connection to them, a real heart connection. And she said, I know, I just feel like they're family or something. I don't know what it is. And she was out meditating, trying to connect with them. And she was sitting there, standing there, and something patted her on the butt.
Oh, that would be a shock.
Yeah, and she just jumped, and she goes, and she felt this real loving energy, like playful energy afterwards. And she turned around, and there was nothing there. There was nobody. Nobody there. And she just had an inner sense that it was Bigfoot just messing with her. But what was funny is I was not too far away from her, and I heard her kind of jump and let out a little yelp almost, you know, when it happened. And
that's then bizarre.
She told me the story. She said, but something patted her on the butt, you know, and, you know, I thought that was kind of funny.
That is what. Have you ever read? There's a book called In the Spirit of Crazy Horse by Peter Matteson. My friend Bill Hancock sent that to me. And it's actually mostly kind of in the old days we might have called it a social studies book, but it's a little deeper than that. It's a lot of the social action that was taken by the Sioux and social injustices that have happened to them, and struggling to bring their tribal leadership together, that kind of thing. Well, you're reading it, and every once in a while, it'll say something like, they'll be interviewing one of the Lakota elders, and he'll say something like, well, I remember that it was this week because that was the same week that so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so all saw the big man down by the creek.
Mm-hmm.
Big man with, you know, capital B, capital M, and you know what they mean by the big man.
Yeah.
That's their word for the Bigfoot. And it works its way into the book that way. This is what happened. The same way as if they'd say, I know it was there because there were two teepees standing there. Well, it's just such a normal and natural part of their life. They don't even censor it or make any seem that it's unusual at all that they're discussing it or talking about it. But they seem to say that the presence of the Bigfoot is that it is trying to call attention to itself when it is seen, and that it's trying to bring awareness to and attention to one thing or another. And, you know, I said to this latest witness that I had, the latest Bigfoot witness, that is, that I said, this creature wanted you to see it because it growled twice. You know, it growled once, you turned around and looked at it, and it didn't like that. You turned your back on it, it growled again so that you would turn around and look at it and really see it. There's no other way to interpret that. If it had not wanted to see it, it could have just stood there and probably had stood there at other times and remained silent, and she would not have been aware that it was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it wanted her to see it for some reason.
Yeah, there's a couple stories here with the, I know we have a lot of Lakota elders come here and do ceremony They love the land here because it is a very high energy place and a vortex. A lot of chiefs have actually come here. But,
making me want to come there.
Yeah. We had a big Heart of the Heart conference, and we had a lot of elders from a lot of different nations come, and boy, crazy activity. Did a snake dance, all kinds of things. You know, they revealed a lot of ancient knowledge, what was interesting is that the locals here have a saying. They said, if you want to come and see Bigfoot, you'll never see Bigfoot. If Bigfoot wants to see you, then you'll see Bigfoot.
Ah, yes.
It's funny.
I've been saying this thing about the dog man since my very first book.
Mm-hmm.
That it appears that it wants you to see it. If it wants you to see it, it will. It chooses those to whom it appears.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I agree with that because the Bigfoot scenario here is that, you know, they'll come and they'll throw pine cones at some of the hunters and things like that, and you know, knock on logs and signal and do a lot of, and they'll warn them if they're getting into areas they don't want them to be. There's a lot of that information going on here, but they say that usually when Bigfoot appears to them, it's given them a message that they need to slow down and get right with spirit and nature, and get balanced. And it's telling them that, you know, there's usually a very strong message that comes with the sighting.
Mm, that's interesting. I was going to ask you that too about I have a couple of helpers who've been keeping an eye on this site for me recently.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was near the structure last week when something very heavy and large came flying through the air and landed in the brush. And this is not a woods. To get to that structure, you have to almost hack your way through brambles. And
yeah.
It's not like a place where any people would be in there playing tricks on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's quite isolated, too. And she was pretty sure it was a rock. She couldn't find it to make sure, but I said, well, that certainly sounds like what I hear of Bigfoot activity, but
yeah.
What do you think of, to me, my preferred method of investigating is not to take 40 people with sticks to bang on trees and
mm-hmm.
all shouting, because
that's not going to work, yeah.
I would think that it would just frighten, but... you know, that the creatures would sort of withdraw in disgust,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you'd be so, you know, my way is more to put some food out and sit there,
yeah.
preferably in a car. but you know, I just wondered what you thought of that technique. It's always sort of puzzled me that I mean, they say they get knockings in return, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, what I've heard, I've heard some stories where the one guy used to feed them peanut butter and banana sandwiches, and he said they just loved them, and they would climb over anything to get to them, you know, so...
Really?
Yeah, and so, and then also, I know that apples and cucumbers are a favorite, so if you're going to put some food out, they seem to love those. Something about peanut butter, I guess they really love. But the what's interesting is what I would do is I would go there and I would, you know, take a flute or something else with you and meditate and put your intention on it and ask its permission and say, I would really like to contact you and just send a telepathic message out. I'm here at peace, and just open your heart up and just try to send out the most loving message you can. It's amazing. They'll feel that because there is, you know, there's the old thing. We all live in this unified field and everything is connected. And when you know that, you're even more connected. And if you put your intent on them and send that energy out, they'll feel it and they'll feel at peace and they'll feel why you're there. And I've always felt that they can read you and sense your energy and they know you're coming a mile away. Because they
well, you'd
are
have so to figure. Well, even if they're natural animals, they're going to have a sense of smell. I think a wolf's sense of smell is 100 times greater than that of a human.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So just natural, even just natural senses. Mm-hmm. And with the dog man, I go back and forth. Every time I think that I figured out that, yes, it's a natural wolf that has adapted to walk upright, you know, there's this reason and this reason. Well, then I'll get one of these people who said I felt that it, you know, told me that I shouldn't take another step and I should just turn around and go back home. People will even say, even people who just drive by them on the road will say, I felt it got in my head and was trying to slow up and slow down to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do. I think some of these beings, and I don't have any experience at all, actually, with the dogman or whatever, but I know the Bigfoot, from my experience, is that they are extremely sensitive, and I think they're highly evolved in the nature kingdom, and they know how to blend in with the forest and choose whether or not you see them. And they also have an ability to either shapeshift or just vanish altogether. And in the report, the American Academy of Science, when they did their report, there were a lot of reports in there where people said they saw them walking across a grassy clearing and they just disappeared. They said there's nowhere they could have gone to be out of sight. And
I've heard that too. Yeah,
and they just vanished. So that's what I've always felt, that like the Native Americans say, that, you know, if Bigfoot wants to see you, it will, you know, but if you don't have, if your mind and spirit isn't right or whatever, you're not going to see anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that eventually, I'd really love to see one, just to be the seer and not the seeker always.
Yeah, I would, you know, I would do, if it were me personally, I would go with maybe a couple people or somebody you really trust, you know, and make sure they have good intentions, that they don't have a lot of fear or whatever. And I would take some peanut butter and banana sandwiches and set them out and make a habit. Do it maybe two or three times. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon they'll say, well, maybe, you know, maybe this person might be okay. But definitely after you do see it or photograph it or whatever, and I know you will, don't tell anybody where it is and where this happened.
I'm really keeping that private. Well, not just for them, but also for the people who live there, you know, because it's hell to have your home overrun by, and I'll tell you, there was an incident that happened a few years ago where a man saw, actually it was an upright dog man, but in trying to describe it to the sheriff's deputy, as soon as they hear upright and furred, you know, covered with fur, they assume Bigfoot. And this sheriff's deputy wrote Yeti in the log, and it went out on lots of TV stations as being a Bigfoot sighting when it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And there were certain people that came immediately to town trying to be there to be in on it and trampling all over everything and talking to the witnesses. And wouldn't take no for an answer that it wasn't a Bigfoot that he saw. Yeah. But the more they come, then the more the national press comes and the more other people come. And you just end up with a field that's impossible to research anymore.
Yeah, it totally destroys any authenticity of the event. And, you know, I've seen that happen over and over again. We, you know, even here we've had, you know, luckily we actually had Jay Leno send a crew up here. And they were going to make a spoof out of it. And we had Hannity with Fox News come up here. And they, you know, they came and they were kind of like, okay, well, you know, we have a huge listening base that really wants to know about this. And the ratings went through the roof when they did the special on it. But they put their little Hollywood and showed a gray alien and things like that. But then when they came here, they just had their minds blown, because all of a sudden they go, wait a second, this is real. They got excellent footage. I know Jay Leno just canned it. He dropped it all together. Danny Dyer came up and did a special, and he had his mind blown here and saw it. He said he was on UFO overload. He saw so many, he didn't know what to do with it. But
Sean Hannity's show came here and did a very nice, very, very nice piece.
Yeah, they did a pretty fair. Yeah, they did a fair piece with me, and luckily I knew they were going to have the debunkers come on, so I debunked the debunkers ahead of time.
Oh, that's nice when you can do that.
yeah. So they ended up with egg on their face because they were saying, well, if you look at these websites, you can tell these are nothing but satellites. And right before that, I said, well, we used their own data to tell whether or not these are satellites or the space station or Evastat or any of the known objects up there, Genesis. So these don't conform to any of the known objects, satellites, space stations, or iridium flares or anything else. And so it ended up debunking the debunkers, you know, which was really good.
Classic.
Yeah, but they got some real good footage while they were here. And
what did they get footage of?
Of the ships coming in, huge light ships coming in,
really?
powering up and going right over us, and people down below us, you know, cheering. You hear everybody cheering in the background, and you know, some pretty good footage. And these things were making turns, and but you know, they did give the debunkers their shot too at the same time.
Well, I'll have to go and look that up. I know that you can still see the Beast of Bray Road episode on the Sean Hannity if you go to YouTube. Is yours available too?
It should be. Yeah, it's on our website, actually. You can see the Danny Dyer.
I'll check it out from that.
Yeah, if you go to eSETI.org, you can see the Danny Dyer special. You can see the Paranormal State special, which was really interesting because we gave Paranormal State the exact time and date that the ships would come in and where to have their cameras rolling. And their psychic, Chip Coffey, got the exact same information.
I know Chip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without us. Yeah, you could ask him about it without us even speaking.
Huh.
He said 10 o'clock in the east. And I said, well, if you have your cameras aiming at 10 o'clock in the east, a little more north, you're going to see there's going to be a nice ship come through there. And it did. They came right through exactly where we said. They powered up, you know, totally got huge and bright. And then they went, you know, around the treetops and back around the backside of the mountain. And they got the whole thing on film.
Now, what do you do personally with all this knowledge? How does this change your life? And what, now, do I sound like I'm interviewing you? I apologize, but I'm just fascinated by the topic.
Yeah, it's interesting because with me, it's believe it or not, I came from a very pretty solid background. And I used to be in commercial real estate. I had my own offices. I was a board of director on the Chamber of Commerce. And then I had a drowning. I had a near-death experience, and it just blew me wide open and completely shifted gears. And from then on, it's just been one major event after another, because what happened, I came back with kind of an interdimensional mind. I could go back and forth, and I kept experiencing a lot of the different planes and dimensions that people, you know, the scientists know about them. I had a lot of intense 30 years training after that, you know, with lamas and yogis and master teachers to understand and deal with that type of experience and learn how to heal unseen negative influences and set boundaries and things like that. But I've had a long history and background in this. So now when these things happen, I just go, oh, that's interesting. You know, it's like, it's hard to top it. When you've gone to the plane of bliss and you've met the source firsthand, anything else is just,
it's hard to tunnel of light experience.
Yeah. I went through the tunnel of light and through a lot of different levels and ended up in this golden plane of bliss. But I always tell people it's hard to top that. You know, everything else is just interesting, and you have no more fear of death because you already died.
Oh, right,
and
right.
You know where you're going. So it's just like, and one of the things that happens here is that there has been so many experiences here where people saw ships, beings step out of the ships, opportunities for contact, and the people ran. they jumped in their car and split or ran or whatever. They didn't, because of fear or whatever, they didn't, you know, stick around and say, you know, hey, what's up? You know, who are you guys, you know, or whatever. And I'm the guy that sticks around.
And what happens when you, I mean, what do you do with this on a practical level? How do you deal with the fact that, you know, these enlightened beings are coming here and hopefully changing the planet around for the good?
Well, with me, it's that I've been tying it all together with the research of the ancient history, the ancient past. Even tying it into the Bible and frescoes and everything, just tying all this together and showing, look, these are our ancient ancestors. They're very tied in with all the religions. They've been around forever. And I just show the whole history and the documentation of it and then take them up to now, what's happening, and just focusing on majorly focusing on the awakening and healing process, you know, helping people to, mm-hmm. you know, release the past and heal. And I do a lot of counseling and written books and things like that of that nature, which cover our ancient history and how we've misinterpreted a lot of it. So basically, that's been my focus.
Have you seen that recent discovery of the 10,000-year-old pyramids in China, the step pyramids?
Yes, uh-huh. And the one in Bosnia?
Yeah, I don't think the Bosnian ones are as well formed or documented, but I've seen aerial photographs of the Chinese ones, and they're unmistakable. I mean, I think there's still some controversy in Bosnia, but in China, if you see the aerial photographs, they're unmistakable.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many of them.
Has anybody gotten... Now, what I find is, and I don't know, I've seen the photographs and the aerial photographs and everything else, but I know they've been keeping quite a lid on it. Has anybody really been able to explore them and go into them and find out really what's going on there?
Yeah, that's what I you know, it's just so recently come to my attention that I've been looking for that same information, and I saw somewhere that they believed that they were built by, and supposedly this was coming down from the indigenous Chinese population, their very ancient beliefs were that they were built by tall, blonde, your classic Nordic type, over six foot tall, blonde people that came in great spaceships and airships and used the flat tops of these step pyramids as their landing bases. Mm-hmm. And then the ones in South America, you know, formed the same purpose. And they had all kinds of things to say about them. And supposedly some of the early emperors were supposed to be descended from them. You know, and it sort of course, reminds you of Egypt. And
oh, yeah. Same story.
Yeah.
And same thing in Mexico. When you ask the indigenous people, you know, they point up at the sky and they say the gods, you know, built them.
Right.
And built these pyramids. And, you know, I think it's funny where the over in Egypt, you know, the, was it Zahari Hawass or whatever his name is, he keeps trying to push the thing that they had, a little metal rod, you know, the cubit and a round stone, and they built they cut all those stones with this little round rock and measured them with this cubit and then put them all in place. And it's just, to me, it's unthinkable. That
it doesn't seem likely, does it?
No, it's impossible if you do the math for them to do that, even in that amount of time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously it was. But, you know, from my own experience, I was even told how they built the pyramids, and it was a lot different than we're told, but you know, they had technology basically what they told me that they had laser technology and sound technology to levitate and move the
I've heard that. Yeah.
And if you check the huge, you know, stone slabs, they've actually been cut with an extreme heat over 7,000 degrees because it's crystallized as you go into the rock. So, you know, it wasn't hammered out with a round stone or a chisel Jewish slaves didn't do it. You know, it was done with some extreme technology.
Yeah, they're amazing. Well, these ones in China, they've even found pipes and they've got little sections of, you know, crust encrusted ancient sections of this remaining pipe that went from the pyramids down into the earth that they think were tapping geothermal energy.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they were doing so many different things energetically, and I think some of them were landing pads, and a lot of them were initiation. They're actually temples that they used to initiate people, and you know, they'd go down in the king's chamber, and they'd actually put them in that sarcophagus and close the lid on them, and they'd have to sit there for 3 days, and talk about a dark retreat. That would be a very intense experience.
I would say so.
So there are a lot of information. There's a lot of information coming out about what their real purpose was, and I think they had multi purposes to them. They provided, you know, different functions.
Probably. You know, but
I don't think they were burial chambers at all, especially the great, you know, the bigger ones, the big pyramids.
No, it doesn't seem to make sense.
No, it doesn't add up. But what's interesting here is that I know what we talk about here is the walk on the wild side, but when you have like several thousand witnesses and, you know, triple PhD Boeing engineers and Air Force Base commanders and Lockheed engineers and, you know, that have been here, that have testified and actually filmed the ships themselves, and even the Skunk Works people have been here, NASA's been here, everybody's been here, and they all say these aren't ours. And most of them have gone public. The NASA guys won't go public. You know, we can't bring them out. We just showed them the footage, and they got to see the ships themselves, and we just got their opinion on it, and they said that's nothing that we have.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like anything. You know, I mean, what my brother saw the week before last was not anything that we have in any way, shape, or form. And actually, might be kind of weird, but I also have a sister who saw a football field-sized triangle over Madison, Wisconsin. This was probably about, 15 years ago when she was out walking with her husband. He wasn't looking up, so he didn't see it, but she just glanced up. She was reading this billboard, and it was hovering above the billboard. And as she looked at it, it began a wave of camouflage went over it, and then she found herself looking at the stars.
Yeah, you know, we had that happen here. We had one as big as a football field, a giant triangle one. It flew over us treetop level, and it had a large bank of lights in the back of red lights that were flashing at us, like, you know, saying, hey, you know, like getting our attention. And then it made a rollover turn, kind of started rolling over to the right and turning, and it phased out and just totally disappeared.
Right, yeah.
Not a sound.
Not a sound. This one didn't make a sound either. By the time she got her husband, poked him in the ribs enough that he looked up, it had just the last tip of it vanished.
Mm-hmm.
So that's two members of my family who've seen
this. Yeah. And, you know, it really messes you up when you see something like that, because when it doesn't make a sound, something that big flying that low, that's not even pushing air or making a sound.
Right.
And then on top of that, it phases out and just vanishes right as you're looking at it. It really turns your psyche upside down a little bit, too.
It would have to. And that's what people say when they tell me they've seen the Dog Man, too. It's like, I've seen something that I know couldn't exist. And they always say, you know, I think about it every single day. Either they push it from their mind completely, or they think about it every single day. It's something that you have to either accept or completely reject. You can't just say, well, it was sort of there, because either it was or it wasn't. And if it was, it means that we don't know everything. And that's a frightening thought to most humans. That's we're not wired to be uncertain about things. We're wired to try and figure them out. And that's another thing people will say to me that I'm sure happens with the UFOs, too, is they'll say, as soon as I saw it, this catalog started in my head, or it was like a flip chart where I'm going through everything I can possibly think of, like, is that a bear? No. Is that a deer? No. Is that a raccoon? No. You know, eliminating all the possibilities, because and I'm sure that's a very ancient survival thing. I mean, it would have been very handy to go, is that a bunny rabbit? No. Is that a tiger that's going to eat me? Yes. You know, and we sort of retain that wiring as a survival instinct, and then when it doesn't work and we can't identify it, panic sets in. And I'm sure that's why the people that you have that see the ships and see the beings, once they realize it's real, it's too much, and they just have to leave. I call, and people will continually say, as soon as I figured out I didn't know what it was, I stepped on the gas and was out of, I call it the gas reflex.
Yeah. You know, I was wondering, now, has anybody ever been attacked or hurt by these wolfmen? Or?
Interestingly, no. Now, you have to understand, this is over 20 years, and hundreds of reports all over the country and the world, you know, European countries, Australia. The only injury I've ever had reported was a man in Canada who encountered one out in the open on a trail, and it lunged at him, and he thought it was, he actually sort of panicked. He said, I don't think it would have hit me if I hadn't kind of jumped the wrong way. But he, in his panic, he was just kind of moving weirdly, and the thing grazed his hip with its fang and left this long, jagged gash. He sent me a photograph of it. He had to go to the hospital and get stitches, and he told them it was a bear. But he said, you know, if it had been a bear, or even whatever it was, at that close range, if it had wanted to get me, it could have done a lot more damage. He thinks it was just accidental. And other than that, people have said they felt the creature looked angry that they saw it. It looked like it wanted to eat them, but it couldn't. You know, I hear those kinds of things. It's a lot, like I said, it's a lot more malign and aggressive than the Bigfoot encounters.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess I don't need to run out and get my silver bullets right now.
No, I don't think that they're the traditional werewolves. I don't think they're anything. Like the you know, my books all have werewolf in the title. For instance, I've got, or something similar. I'm working on one for Penguin right now that's coming out this next summer called Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America. But most of my books have werewolf in the title because it's just a lot sexier to say werewolf. And people have a better idea what you mean. It's, say, unknown upright canine, which is my preferred term. People kind of blank out after the second.
There's a report at the, I guess, the Skinwalker Ranch where the, I guess, these creatures, these just massive wolves, I guess, or dog creatures or whatever they were, but they seem to be, I don't know if they didn't go upright, they were down on all fours.
They saw them both ways. They saw upright.
Oh,
ones.
Did they? Oh, okay.
I have that book
I read an account. Actually, I heard an account of one of the guys talking where I guess he came out and was trying to kill one of his livestock. I'm not sure what kind of animal it was, trying to pull it through the railing. And the guy came out, and I guess he had something like a 357 or a pretty big pistol, and he emptied quite a few shots in this thing, and the thing just turned around and looked at him and walked off.
Yes, and I hear that fairly often, too. In fact, a month or so ago, I had a report from near Alberta, Canada, where a guy was on a trail and ran into an unknown upright canine. And he was armed with a camera and with a gun, and he raised the gun first, and the thing just looked at him. And so he thought, well, it's not going to do anything. I'll take a picture. He raised his camera, and it looked surprised and startled and ran off on its hind legs.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, you know, to me, it's like this thing has some kind of supernatural powers if you can empty, you know, a 357 into it and shoot several shots at it, you know, point blank range almost, and it just turns around and walks off.
Yep, I've heard the same.
That just doesn't happen, you know.
No, I've heard the very same thing from people who have fired and seen the bullets go into its hide, but there's no blood. You know, there's no blood trail. It just runs away, and that's that. But it,
it
doesn't
seem... It could
be
some kind of an astral being. It's just not quite physical. Right. It might be a fourth dimensional...
Exactly. It's just like it's somehow slightly out of phase, and that's another theory as to why Bigfoot and this creature don't show up as anything but, just blobby squares of fur because they're not quite in the same dimensional wavelength that we are, and so our cameras are set to catch what our eyes perceive as reality, and a slightly higher vibratory rate doesn't register.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I notice here the cameras will pick up more of the visible light spectrum than your eyes. And so people will take a photograph out in the field here, and beautiful ships will show up on their cameras, but they never saw them.
Right, that's true too. Yeah, the cameras sometimes can be more sensitive, but maybe their creature's vibratory rate is just a little the opposite end.
Yeah, in the lower levels. There are so many things going on. My theory too is that the veils are lifting and the veils between worlds are lifting, and I think we're having a lot of bleed throughs or beings stepping through from one world or one dimension into this one and back and forth, and I think that's going to continue to happen and actually increase.
Well, it certainly fits all the facts of the sightings of these various things better than the thought that we have all these, suddenly we've spawned all these natural creatures that are huge carnivores, that are filling mm-hmm. our fields. Because even though these sightings are fairly rare, there's still enough of them that in order for this creature to be as widespread as the sightings and span all these decades, there would have to be some pretty large breeding populations.
Mm-hmm.
And they would show up.
Yeah, I know, especially with the Bigfoot, they talk about whole tribes of them and pods or whatever you want to call it. And there'll be several of them all together, living together. And I think there's probably, Lord knows, there could be a whole civilization of them, living underground or in another world right alongside ours.
I do think underground, if they are natural animals, they almost have to have access to cave systems or some kind of underground residence. That's really the only explanation.
Yeah, we have caves here very close by we've gone into these caves and they go forever. And they split off into three or four different directions. And we have the ice caves here and the cheese caves and all these different caves. And people have actually seen, big red eyes looking at them and this being step out, and have seen the silhouettes and just freaked out and threw everything down and ran out. But it'd be very easy for them to be nocturnal and actually live in those caves and actually never be seen.
Oh, right. That makes the most sense for a natural animal, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. We've got just a few minutes left. I wanted to, if there's any other stories you want to share, go ahead, and then we'll give all the information for your website or to acquire your books as well.
I don't know if there are particular stories. It is odd that lately more of the reports that I get, and I often get, I average one a week consistently, which kind of blows my mind. Sometimes I'll get two or three. Once in a while I'll skip a week and then get two the next. But lately they've been more Bigfoot than Dogman. And one of the most recent Bigfoot sightings, the man also reported seeing one of those pterosaurs.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting that there could be very well like an inner earth doorway or a connection where, from what I understand, if you get into a lot of the ancient lore, that there is a whole inner earth or inner chambers within the earth where there are a lot of these things that we thought were just myths actually still exist and are ongoing, like every life form that ever existed on the planet is still maintained in these other areas. And who knows, they could be popping in and out.
That is sort of a scary thought.
Yeah. Well, we've had a three-toed object here. I don't know what this thing is, but it had three toes.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, a claw on each toe And the stride of this thing was amazing. I mean, we were measuring, it looked like about an 8-foot stride. When it was running, it was up to almost 16 foot.
That sounds like a dinosaur or something, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And whatever this thing was, I mean, it could move. I mean, it really had quite a stride to it. So, you know, I have no idea what that, we just saw the tracks and we picked them up twice in the mud near the chicken coop. We didn't lose any chickens, but, you know, we've had, I'm sure you probably heard, do you have any, the chupacabra sightings or the other things in your neighborhood there?
Well, nothing that I think was an actual chupacabra. Every once in a while, somebody will find a dead raccoon with mange.
Oh, yeah.
And because the tissues shrink back from the gums and around the claws, it will look pretty strange, you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it makes the fangs and the claws look more elongated than they really were in real life. And for some reason, those get labeled chupacabras, but they're always usually identified by the DNA as being some known animal. And I don't
coyote know, or raccoon or something.
Yeah, I don't know for the life of me why they call it a chupacabras, because it doesn't have spines on its back or
flying or
flyers or scales or those are the original chupacabras that was described as a pretty wicked looking beast.
Yeah, very fast, and I guess some could fly or some had spines on their backs.
Two
different. And some very reputable sightings. I guess even a police officer got bit by one and shot at it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and we have had lizard men sightings in this state, and also one that's got that I broke the news story that's been covered quite a bit is the man bat in La Crosse, where a furry humanoid with a 10-foot bat-like wingspread. Almost crashed into a truck's windshield and then instead went straight up overhead and made the two men in the truck very sick.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, the man bat. And, I interviewed them at great length and went there and was there on site doing field studies fairly soon after the sighting, and really became convinced that they were completely honest about what they'd experienced. Mm-hmm. And then discovered that there was backup, that other people in the same area had seen a similar thing.
Yeah, I've heard about the lizard man. I actually heard a story where I guess it ripped somebody's bumper off or something.
Yeah, that's a really famous one down south. It was a little more interactive than the ones around here. I can't think of which southern state it was in right offhand, but yeah, I've written about that for something or other. But yeah, that's probably the most famous lizard man episode.
I hate that when giant lizards rip your bumper off. Ruins your whole day. Well, anyway, we're running out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been amazing, and I'm glad you talked about that pterodactyl bird that other people have seen it, because I've seen it as well, but I don't really talk about it. But we've have a lot of witnesses here, including some police, and one guy ran off the road because he saw it eating some roadkill here. It scared him so bad, and all he could say was pterodactyl. But I don't think it's a pterodactyl. I think it's called pterosaurus, and it has a
pterosaur,
a ball. Yeah, pterosaur, and it has a ball at the end of its tail.
Yeah, the pterodactyl is one type of pterosaur. They're related, but they're different. But people are. I've been getting a fair number of those sightings lately. Mm-hmm. It's kind of surprising. If people did want to contact me, the easiest way is to go to my poor languishing site, beastofbrayroad.com, and you can email me from all kinds of points on that site. It also has lists of my books, and more importantly, my other contact places that I do keep up better, Twitter, Facebook, all the usual ones. That Beast of Bray Road website, and also I have weirdmichigan.com that you can go to. Both of those are under construction. I'm trying to update them and get them into the modern world, but they were built so long ago on this old Mac, and it's the only thing I can still use to update them, and it's become extremely unwieldy. It doesn't work with anything else mm-hmm. anymore. So I'm trying to trot them over to WordPress somehow. But in the meantime, you can still go to them and get the other information from the pages. And there's quite a bit of background information on beastofbrayroad.com. Mm-hmm. You can look through the old logs and things like that and learn quite a bit.
Great. Hey, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Unfortunately, we're out of time, and keep me informed. You know, shoot me an email or whatever
I
if you
come
have any.
Out there, I want to come.
Yeah,
out
big tips. Definitely, you have to come out and check this place out.
I want to.
All right. Well, have a great evening.
And thank you so much for having me.
All right. You too. Bye. All right. It's James Gillen, your host with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great evening and watch out for those upright dogmen or watch the skies for those beautiful UFOs. They're here. Bye.